Good morning, everyone. It's Mike Kirk here. Just prior to opening up to questions, I just wanted to make a short opening statement. We said at the AGM we'd be looking to give consideration to this sort of event, and we at that point anticipated that it would be in the context of being able to provide substantive details on the KSA project following an announcement that it had commenced. Under the current circumstances, we're going to be more constrained in what we can say as a result of the continued uncertainty. However, we think it is the right thing to do to give you the opportunity to ask questions given the latest developments. After being delayed during the project, those experienced most recently were due entirely to issues between two counterparties in Saudi Arabia. And until this week, progress was continuing to be made, and we had an expectation that it would be possible to progress on a timetable that was broadly in line with previous guidance. And as an indication of this, we recently ordered chemicals to enable fuel production to commence. It was only at our most recent meeting on Monday of this week that we received guidance from the KSA Oil Company that there was now materially uncertainty that they could progress the back-to-back trial agreement with the electricity company in the timescales originally envisaged. This meant that overall delivery of the original project was now uncertain. Our refinement counterparty has indicated to the KSA Oil Company that it may not be able to continue to support the project if the relevant contracts are not signed by 1st of April 2018. Aquadros is working hard with all parties to see substantive progress can be made over the next week or so, enabling the project to be delivered as originally envisaged. And whilst this is possible, it remains hugely challenging to deliver this as the remaining matters rely entirely on third parties' actions. We're also reviewing parallel options to progress the KSA project, though these are unlikely to be deliverable in the short term. In the meantime, our business development activities and the operational support and R&D activities that underpin them will continue. And we still believe that our M4 technology has significant potential, especially as we approach 2020. Thank you. Now, we'd like to answer as many questions as we can, and the call will be recorded for those that are not able to dial in. Now, we received some questions via the IR portal, and if these haven't been answered, they will be put to us by representatives from STI. But first of all, I would like to open up the call to questions. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to remove your question, please press star followed by two. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your phone is unmuted locally. To confirm, that's star followed by one to ask a question. One moment for the first question, please. The first question comes from the line of Frank Bean. Please go ahead.
Hello, Mike and Bald, and everybody else on the call. My name is Frank Bean. Personal investor in Quadras Fuels International. Mike, can I ask the board, please, do QFI know the reason why the party concerned will not sign the contract for us?
No, we don't. And again, Frank, just to confirm, this contract isn't between ourselves and the party. It's between two parties in Saudi Arabia. And because of that, despite our requests with the oil company, we're not able to provide any guidance on that at the moment because we simply don't know.
There are two parties within KSA.
It's between the oil company and the electricity company. But all I can say, as I said at the start, Frank, is we're working hard with the oil company to try and get resolution of this, and we will continue to do that throughout the next week or so.
Right. Okay, Mark. Well, thanks so much for that.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Richard Boddy with Norvik. Please go ahead.
Morning, Mike. Morning, Jason.
Can
you enlighten a little bit in terms of what will happen if the company all geared up and ready to produce and supply MSAR says, that's it, I've had enough, no more delays, I'm thinking about my ultimatum, we're not going to supply, we're not going to engage with this contract. What would they propose to do? Would they propose to engage with all the equipment to send it back to us to cease, or do they believe they could find other customers that MSAR can be supplied to? How supportive are they?
I think I can answer that, Richard. They're very supportive, and they've been very supportive throughout this obviously extended process. There's been no discussions about removing the equipment from site, and obviously, you know, we're looking at other opportunities to supply MSAR from that particular facility anyway. So it's work in progress. At the moment, the focus, to be honest with you, is to try and resolve the current impasse in Saudi Arabia, and that's occupying a lot of our time at the moment. But there are obviously other opportunities that we're also exploring in parallel.
But Jason, that's hugely encouraging that although they're giving a deadline, they're not talking about, oh, well, we're out of here if it ain't met. That would lend some comfort for me that if it got delayed by another, 10 days, they wouldn't throw dummy out of the mouth. They'd actually say, okay, let's get on with it.
Again, it's hard to say, because obviously these discussions are live and ongoing, and obviously we're lobbying as hard as we can to try and keep all the parties talking to each other during this difficult time. We can't really guarantee any way of timing in terms of when the refinery in question decides to move on. But having said that, they're an active refinery. They run an operating plant, and they can't keep that refinery in limbo as well. So that's really the pressure on them is to make sure that refinery can operate in the most effective way. Rather than stay and keep their lives on hold. So, we're trying to keep everyone happy at the moment.
Thank you.
As a reminder, that's star followed by one to ask a question. Your next question comes from the line of Paul Hale, who's a private investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, everyone. I've got one question. I'm a private investor. I said one question, three plus. And I apologise for not catching all of the interview this morning, but I have problems getting through. So the first point is, how long can the company realistically continue to trade without an income stream? Point two, how can we look to realise shareholder value from our existing technologies? And thirdly, are plans in place for either a joint venture or company sale if we struggle with the first two parts of my question?
Right. Thank you very much, Paul. If I could just, I guess, start off, we have indicated that as of 31st of December, we have around just under £3.5 million worth of cash. And after our cost-cutting measures that were put in place during the third quarter of 2017, we've got a monthly spend of around £0.225 million per annum per month. So we've got, we think, a comfortable cash cushion for us to undertake, I guess, three things that we're doing in order of priority. The first is, as Jason has said, to continue to push really hard to ensure that we get the KSA project underway on the original timetable. And whilst that is certainly possible, it's hugely challenging, but we're working very hard on that and we'll continue to do that. Then I think I've got to sort of wrap up a response to your question, Paul, in terms of what we will do then if it isn't possible to continue the trial as currently envisaged. There will be then two other things that we'll be doing. One is we'll continue to work with our partners in Saudi Arabia to see if it's possible to do the trial under a different arrangement. And in parallel with that, we'll be looking at a strategic review of the business to see how best we can enhance and deliver value to shareholders. And that will include all potential options available to us. But at this point, that has not been commenced as yet. But just to give you an idea, that is going to be done internally in conjunction with our advisors. And we will start that as soon as we've got a clear indication as to what the outcome of the current discussions in Saudi Arabia are with respect to the trial.
Well, thank you. I wish you well on all of the above. Try and bring home the contract if you can.
We certainly will try hard to do that, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Next question comes from the line of David Happy. Please go ahead.
Good morning, mate. Good morning, Jason. I have a question. Going back to the first questioner who asked whether you had any idea what the problem was between the two parties, and you said that you didn't, that they are not advising you as to what this problem is. It just seemed kind of, from a kind of layman's point of view, kind of weird that they're just saying there's a problem, but we're not going to tell you what it is. Do you even know whether the problem that exists is a new one or one of long-standing? It seems strange that this has been, you've been negotiating with KSA for years, and then suddenly at the 11th hour and 59th minute, this kind of rabbit comes out of the hat. Was there any inkling that this kind of problem existed at all?
David, I sort of echo what you're saying there, and I think it is hugely frustrating for us. Perhaps not unusual in terms of what happens within the kingdom, but we honestly don't have any idea as to what this issue is. We don't believe it's to do specifically with our trial, but we don't have any formal indication or, to be honest, any wild guesses that we'd like to speculate as to what it is. But we will work hard to try and get this issue resolved. And both Jason and I are in, I was out in Saudi Arabia earlier this week. I'm going out again next week, and Jason is in regular contact with all the relevant parties there, and we're working really hard to resolve it.
Can I ask just a quick follow-up? Because my understanding is that all of the work that has been done was based on a memorandum of understanding with KSA. I can't recall the date of that, but it was some years ago. At times I have kind of wondered that it seems slightly strange that everybody puts so much into this and invests money and time and everything else into a contract, when the basis of it is simply a memorandum of understanding. There's no actual contractual agreement. And therefore, it seems a rather kind of, I'm not being necessarily critical of you here, but it seems a rather kind of fragile basis for people putting a lot of time and money and investment into something when it's simply based on an understanding rather than a kind of contractual agreement. Is that my misunderstanding of how things work?
It's a good point, David, and I think what I would say is in that part of the world they seem to have a higher regard for memorandums of understanding. We signed it, I think, in about August 2016 for memory. And what I would say is that the National Oil Company that we're dealing with is effectively spent over $1 million so far within that MOU to get the project to this stage. There's been a commitment on that side of things, and it's hugely frustrating for us at the moment. What we've also mentioned, in the recent announcements, is that there are a number of agreements which are beyond the MOU, which have been signed already, that are basically in line with the trial, that have been signed between us and other counterparties. But obviously, the key agreement is the fuel supply agreement, which we're waiting for, which is contingent on this back-to-back agreement between the two KSA entities.
Okay, well, I had other questions, but I'll book out and let other people kind of come in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next question comes from line of Justin Harris, private investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Just a couple of questions. First of all, the location of the refinery, is it within Saudi or not?
I don't think we can actually comment on that, actually, Justin, in terms of where we are with the contracts. Again, I'll just go back to what I said at the opening, which is, we hope that this would be on the back of a substantive announcement with regard to the trial, and at that point we would be making detailed disclosure of all the relevant counterparties and the plans for that. But at this stage,
perhaps I could rephrase it, and you can tell me whether you can answer. Is it the Cepsa refinery, or is it not the Cepsa refinery? I don't know whether you can answer that. Okay, fine. That's my problem, I understand. Just a second question. The oil company and the power company are both Saudi companies, and if you go high enough in Saudi, they are eventually run by the same people. Is there any chance of lobbying higher up to get those two entities together? And because, I mean, obviously the financials for the power company, they may, for example, get heavy fuel oil very, very cheap, but somebody in Saudi is paying for that. So surely if you go higher up in Saudi, it's the same person running both. Is there any chance of lobbying that person to sort of get together?
We've been very careful not to disclose who those counterparties are within the kingdom. But
sure.
What we can say, Justin, is that there is an awareness of this project and the importance of it to future value delivery in the kingdom at the highest levels within the kingdom and the relevant ministries. And we are using all appropriate channels to try and progress this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As a reminder, that's star followed by one to ask a question. Next question comes to the line of Ian James, private investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, thank you for undertaking this conference call, which in the circumstances I think is very much appreciated. If I could ask a question away from KSA and just bring it GC for a minute and ask you, how close are we to getting some form of income stream from that MOU?
Something we're still working on, Ian. You know, we're looking at a number of opportunities together with JGC at this moment in time. So we can't really give you any further guidance. But yeah, it's definitely work in progress and there's very active dialogue between the two parties.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Manuel Payne. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mike and Jason. In fact, my question has now been answered, so I'll cut myself off.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next question comes from the line of Max McLeod, private investor. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. My question is as follows. Can you give us like a percentage kind of gut feel on the KSA trial going ahead within a reasonable time frame, say like the next 6 months or so? Is it 50-50? Higher, lower? What's your gut feel on that?
I think that's really, I can understand why you're asking the question, Max. I think it's really, really difficult for us to give an answer on that. And I think all we can say, and I know this is just repeating what we said earlier, is we're working really hard to resolve the issue and get this trial working on a timetable that's aligned with the existing sort of guidance. If that is not possible, we'll continue to work hard to see how we can deliver it on a slightly extended timescale. But I'd rather focus on where we're trying to make it 100%, and that's our focus for now, getting that over the line. But yeah, I don't want to give you know, a 50-50, 75-25 at this stage. We're just working really hard to actually deliver it.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of James Garrow. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Mike. It's Jason. I've got many, many actually questions, but I'm going to try to cut them down. The first one is going to be a little bit of a criticism. I feel that the RNSs are really quite ambiguous. And when I hear 20 or 30 investors all translating the RNSs in different ways, I would say that the clarity wasn't there. Now, I know you're under all these NDAs, et cetera, but I think, you know, if you're going to release an NDA, it's got to be very, very clear. You know, it just feels there's a lot of facts being hidden. So that's my first criticism going forward is, you know, I'm always concerned if people are not reading the same sheet and reading the same hint on the same sheet. So if that could be, you know, thought about on the next RNS, that would be great, and that will allow a lot of peace of mind. The second thing is really I'm not sure how you sort out problems if you actually are unaware or do not know what the problem is. I don't know how those get resolved. So I'd be very curious on your take on that. So if you don't understand what's going on in the KSA between the electricity company and the oil company, you know, then I'm not sure how you go about resolving that. If, you know, I guess from an investor's point of view, we're wondering whether it's if it's to do with price or if it's to do with the actual oil, or if it's to, you know, we're just in the dark on that. And the second thing, going back to Justin's question, actually, about CESPA and the KSA, and this is another thing that's really been kept in the dark, is the risk, as an investor, the risk profiles are very, very different. If it's CESPA, you know, it's far more risky investing in Quadrise than if it was KSA who's invested in the equipment. And, you know, from this call, I'm starting to believe in CESPA rather than the KSA, and I was hoping it would be very much the refinery in the kingdom itself, which would show a higher level of commitment. So, you know, this kind of, I guess, this we can't tell you, is only leaving the doubters more room for maneuver. And the other question I'm kind of interested in is when you say short term, what are we talking about short term? Are we talking about 3 months? Are we talking 3 to 6 months? Are we, you know, what is short term? Because, you know, some of us have been in the share for many, many years. And then I guess, sorry to take up everyone's time. I'm just looking at those are the first ones I guess should be answered on my thing. But the other thing I think from the investor's point of view, and, you know, again, you know, we've got 12 months of cash available. You know, what's the probabilities of getting something off the ground in 12 months? Because, as I say, this is quite a, you know, I think you've got very faithful shareholders here, but the time is coming that people are just getting a little bit fed up and nothing's happened.
Thank you, James. What I'll do is we'll go through and between the two of us, we'll try our best to answer those questions. I'd like to come back to you at the end because you put quite a few there. James, just to make sure you believe that we've answered them. But if I go, first of all, in terms of the, I guess more of a statement from you in terms of clarity of RNS, and I think all we can say is that we do our best together with our advisors to ensure that we put out an RNS which gets the relevant information out to shareholders. We do work under constraints of NDA, so if we can't disclose names, we can't do that, but we do want to ensure that we're providing as much clarity as we can on that. But we'll always take on board comments where if people don't believe it's clear enough, and we continue to try and make those better as we go forward. But underlying that is it is in our interest to put as much information in there as possible. So at no stage do we ever just not put information in because we feel we don't want to disclose it. We would rather have that clarity and those names in there, but we just can't do that at the minute. In terms of what's the rationale for sorting out a problem if we don't know what the issue is, what we're doing is just putting as much pressure as we can at all levels within the kingdom and with those two organizations to resolve it as quickly as possible, because time really is of the essence here. Think in terms of the issue on, again, we're not going to comment about where the refinery is for this project, but in terms of the comment that was made in the announcement on the 26th, that the project changed from that originally in terms of the original expectation of the working with a specific refiner in the kingdom, and that was due to sort of costs of that project. And
yeah, and in terms of the risk profile of the investors that you mentioned, James. I mean, James. I mean, it's you know, we very carefully assess the risk profile of all the opportunities, and the fact that the solution we found is, you know, like you say, the quickest way to do it, to implement it for the least cost for the various people and the lowest risk for all the parties concerned. And all those three things were, you know, important factors to the current refinery solution that we've chosen. So, you know, as investors, we hope that, you know, you believe that, and it certainly is like I say, the best way of achieving it with what we have at the moment. That's not to say that there aren't other options available in the future.
And if it does go forward as originally envisaged, there is still a very significant investment on behalf of the clients in Saudi Arabia to this trial.
Right.
You know, in the orders of tens of millions of dollars. So it is a very significant investment that's been made.
Right. Okay. And for me, I look at it from a refinery's take, you know, for all the equipment, then they've got more skin in the game than if they, you know, just purchase the fuel from another source. So those are the kind of things that I look at.
Yeah. I think as part of that, not to get into details, James, but actually, in a sense, wherever that fuel is purchased from, part of that fuel cost includes the recovery of operational and capital costs in there as well. So, you know, in a sense where whoever's actually making that investment, there is a recovery of it through the purchase of that fuel in the end anyway.
Right, okay. Okay, and I'm really terrible at this. I was just looking at your RNS and it says, you know, something like along the thing that the KSA oil company was not able to secure in-kingdom production opportunities as a plural thing, as originally envisaged. I guess as an investor, we thought it was one opportunity that they couldn't secure, but on the RNS, it looks like they haven't been able to secure it with anyone in the kingdom. So you probably can see the difference in that, you know, plural term.
Yeah, I mean,
one's a little bit more worrying than the other one, shall I say.
Yeah, this is to carry out the trial. So, to carry out a trial, it's quite complicated when a refiner is producing multiple products. To produce a single stream of something new can be quite challenging in some refineries. That's not to say that the refinery is not a candidate going forward for a larger scale production, but to do a trial, requires a certain set of logistical advantages, shall we say, sometimes. That really governs where you actually carry out the trial itself.
Right. Okay. Oh, thank you very much. Anyway,
thank you.
Look forward to hearing some good positive news.
Yes, so do we.
Yeah.
Next question comes from the line of Alistair Walker. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I think most of my questions have been answered in a roundabout kind of way. Just on the technical study that was delivered to the client, was there anything untoward in that technical study that could have led to where we are now?
No, not at all, is the answer to that one, Alistair. The technical study pretty much confirms all those things that we said to the client in the first place, which is
fine. Okay. There seemed to be a lot of confidence around about the AGM, certainly that we'd get the sign-off on the trial by the end of the year, and that confidence seems to, it did diminish, but it looks like we've sort of been blindsided by this issue that we don't really know much about. It would probably lead me to think that it's based more on commercial aspect rather than anything else. What I took from the various RNSs was that the fuel wasn't to be produced in country. So on that basis, thinking along those lines, I was curious as to where the feedstock was going to come from. For example, you know, if we're dealing with a national oil company, would they have been supplying the feedstock, for example?
I would say not necessarily. There are a number of options, obviously, that we could utilise from the refining point of view. That oil company, I guess, yeah, to some extent, that's one of the issues, is that we're dealing with two counterparties, the refinery and the national oil company concerned. I guess, like Mike said earlier, in terms of the issue between the oil company and the electricity company, we're trying to ascertain exactly what that remaining issue is. We certainly know it's not technical, because I was in Jeddah only a week before last, and that there was no technical issues remaining. So it could be It could be anything, to be honest, but we believe it's fairly minor, but we don't know. We're trying to ascertain exactly what it is.
All right, gentlemen, that's everything for me then. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Alistair.
Next question comes from line of Max Dark. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I know you can only disclose certain things around the nature of your relationship with the KSA. I was hoping you might be able to give us more colour around your relationship with the KSA and who is championing the project internally. And then my second question is, in terms of refineries, are there possible alternatives you're considering?
Obviously, given that we can't disclose who the client is, it's quite difficult to give you names of, you know, we can't give you names of people, but perhaps it's worth giving you an idea of the sort of caliber of people involved. And Jason can talk to it sort of over a longer period of time, but if I just give you, since I came in, the first discussions that I had was with someone who's now in charge of this company's entire downstream operations. So at a really high level in the company. And I know Jason has had much longer involvement with people over a long period of time.
Yeah, and I think that people we're dealing with in KSA or, you know, the guys who are dealing with, you know, future utilities planning. I mean, it's the oil company, supplies electricity company, and the, you know, the various different other utility companies below that as well. So, you know, at a strategic level, they're the guys that we were dealing with.
Fantastic. And then in terms of refineries, are you considering possible alternatives?
We are, because yeah. there's a huge demand still for fuel oil, and that's likely to remain, obviously, for the next decade. Obviously, there as well. There's multiple refineries that we're looking to approach going forward and have approached already in initial discussions, both within the kingdom and outside.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next question comes from line of Kevin Davis. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Jason. If we take the assumption that actually we do resolve the issue and the trial goes ahead, can you comment, please, on, first of all, will the trial generate meaningful revenue for Quadrice? What timescale should we expect? And on the assumption of a successful trial, what would happen? You expect there to be a gap when there's a big assessment, or would the plan be to roll straight out?
Right. If I come back, thank you, Kevin, to, I think, the first point. We outlined this at the AGM, which is, yes, we are going to get material revenues from this, but in terms of its overall position, it's not expected to make a material profit at this stage, so it will make significant cash contribution to us. In terms of timescale, we're still looking at something where we would expect, if we were able for this to move forward very quickly now, for this to be essentially complete within 2018. But we were at the stage, as we outlined at the AGM, that the detailed timetable was still being worked out, and we would need to commence that process immediately we got the sort of formal go-ahead to this. But if I go back to what I said at the start, Kevin, that we'd already ordered chemicals to enable fuel manufacture to commence, and we previously announced that the facility had actually been commissioned within 2018. I think we'd also said when we started discussions on this that everyone in this has come into it with a view that this is a means to an end, not an end in itself. So the purpose isn't just to do the trial, the purpose is to validate the use of emulsion fuels as part of their future fueling strategy, and then look at how that becomes implemented commercially. It's then very difficult for us to say what the timetable for that would be, but all we said previously and we reiterate now is that we wouldn't be waiting until the end of that trial to start having those discussions about how we would see this implemented and where the various sources of residue and fuel and consumption would be, both within the kingdom and in the region.
Okay, thank you. So are there sort of constraints as to when the trial could take place? So will they allow the trial during periods of peak consumption, for instance?
From a risk profile point of view, they prefer not to carry out the trial during times of peak demand. Having said that, it depends a little bit, you know, what it looks like every summer. So it depends on how much spare capacity is available at that moment in time. But the summer months are generally to be avoided.
Okay, which is obviously not that far away. Okay, you've answered my questions. Thanks very much, chaps, and good luck.
Thank you. Yeah, just to come back just to one point there, Kevin. I mean, in terms of the plan would be if we were to sign the agreements as planned in the next few weeks, the plan would always be to produce the fuel first and then consume it later in the year. So we're still on track from that perspective.
I understand. Thank you.
Thanks, Kevin.
The next question comes from the line of Mark Taylor. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So the language of these 26 RNS seems pretty fatalistic. From the language you're using now, you sound a little more positive, I must say. So has some kind of progress been made, do you feel, or do things look more positive right now?
I mean, I think Mark, that might be just sort of nuance in terms of, you know, what it's like to say things rather than what it is to see, you know, something written down. I think I'm not sure that there's been any substantive difference now, but I think all that we're doing is continuing to work really hard to drive this forward. Certainly in terms of I think that's all I can say. There's nothing substantively changed, but we're continuing to work really hard at this.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Tom Brown. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my questions today. I think it's a good sign of character and valuing your investors, and I appreciate it. My first question is to do with the difficulty of negotiating the Middle East. I've had conversations with board members of other companies who have previously tried to negotiate deals in the Middle East and have come unstuck after investing many years into those negotiations. And they've come unstuck because they failed to understand which they freely admitted to me afterwards, the different culture in the Middle East, the nuances of what people are saying in the Middle East, and interpreting things on their part, interpreting things as very solid commitment, which later turned out to be really stringing them along. So I wondered if you are using any advisors to help you with the difficulties negotiating in the Middle East, or if you have any people who have a large amount of experience negotiating there and who are helping you with your negotiations and interpreting what you're being told.
Okay, Tom, thank you. I think we've said in the past that it can and is challenging to negotiate and to work in the Middle East and in some ways particularly in Saudi Arabia. And I think recognizing that at a very early stage, Quadrise worked with appointed Rafid Group as our formal joint venture partner in the kingdom. And Rafid work in a number of areas, ranging from activities with the National Oil Company, doing ports and harbors type work. So they've got a huge amount of experience of working with various parties and successfully introducing them into the kingdom to deliver material value long-term contracts. So we do recognise that, but we're working with our partner who has got significant experience in this field to help us along this, and they are actively engaged in this, and as well as seeing our oil company clients, and when we're in the region, we always work alongside our local partner there as well.
Okay, to follow on from that, different tack. The existing contracts that are held between the various partners and yourself and the various partners that have already been signed, are those contracts dependent on the existing contracts which are waiting to be signed, or if those contracts that are waiting to be signed do not end up being signed and we end up wanting to work with another partner, can all those existing contracts work with a new contract with another partner, or are they totally dependent on working with the existing set of partners?
I'd say to answer that question, some of them are independent and some of them are dependent. Some of them are the particular refinery counterparty and some of them are not.
Lastly, my final question was, do you get the impression there's been a lot of press over the last couple of days about the Saudi solar energy project in the future? And they're definitely looking at diversifying away from oil power generation. We all know that. But what sense do you get with your negotiations in Kingdom from all people there about the status of oil power generation in the Kingdom at the moment? Is it a slideshow? Is it something that just has to be kept ticking over while these other options are explored? Or is it still something which they're very keen on optimising and having at the forefront of the Kingdom's strategy for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a good question, and a big announcement yesterday in terms of an MOU for renewables, which we noted. I mean, it's part of an overall strategy, we believe, to obviously try and reduce the cost of power generation and diversify the power generation away from, I guess, more expensive oil products. And what we've always said, I guess, in terms of what the attraction is for EMSAR within the Kingdom is that it's the lowest cost means of reducing power, you know, from an oil-based product. So in terms of reducing the cost of generation, I think, you know, we certainly believe that EMSAR still has a very good fit, you know, and obviously you have to fit within the portfolio of other options that they're looking at, which will take time to actually implement anyway and may not happen in the form that, of, you know, that's currently been signed, which obviously looks to be hugely ambitious based on technology which has not necessarily been fully proven yet. So, you know, in terms of the here and now, we see a very good opportunity still to fit in with those plans and really reduce the cost of, you know, of oil that's been even imported within into the Kingdom for power generation.
And you're still getting the sense from KSA that they feel that working on optimising oil power production is a meaningful activity in the near term, and that they don't view it as a kind of a bit of a waste of time to be messing around with a form of power generation which they're planning to replace anyway.
Certainly not heard anything different.
And
the guys we've been speaking to, for sure.
And certainly in terms of the highest level within the Kingdom, what we're putting forward is the potential value opportunity, just to, I guess, give that some context, is this marginal, that, you know, there's potentially, you know, in excess of $500 million per annum benefit to be gained just from the sort of changing fuel supply from HFO, which they import, to using EMSAR. So, you know, even looking over, you know, over a 10-year view, there's $5 billion, and I think even in Saudi terms, that's a prize worth looking at.
Thank you for your answers.
Thanks, Tom.
Next question comes from the line of John Smith. Please go ahead.
Hello, gents. Apologies, I've entered the conference halfway through. Very quick question. Could you give me an indicative idea of how much it would cost to install an MMU?
An MMU, typically, if the client asks us, would take would cost in the order of $5 million.
Okay, so I picked up earlier on as obviously a reticence, probably through regulatory reasons, to give us an inkling, whether it's SEPSA or one of the refineries in the UK, or sorry, in KSA, which are producing the fuel. You said earlier on that they've invested $1 million so far, so I'm just trying to take the logical step. If it's going to cost $5 million to install an MMU, but KSA have only spent $1 million investment so far, is that a reasonable deduction?
Yeah, well, I think going into the trial, the parties carry their costs and then the costs are recovered as fuel is produced, is what Mike said.
Sure, but just perhaps I've not explained it particularly clearly. You mentioned earlier on that so far the KSA has spent upwards of $1 million US investing in this, but you've just told me it would cost $5 million to install an MMU, and therefore I'm left deducing that it's actually SEPSA, which is the fuel provider.
But the two questions are separate. I mean, if somebody comes to ask me how much it costs to get an MMU in my refinery, I'll give them the number $5 million.
And I think if you look at, for example, look at the Merck SEPSA trial, you know, the actual investment by SEPSA was made on the fuel production side, and Merck, as the consumer, invested on the changes on board the ship to accept that fuel. So, you know, they're two sort of separate areas.
Okay, understood. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joel.
Your next question comes from the line of Philip McLaughlin. Please go ahead.
Oh, good morning. It's Philip McLaughlin, Farris Investor. Just a number of questions. What's Quadrise's direct cost to date on this project? Also, I assume that Quadrise still has overall budget control, so coordinator. How is that handled? Does everything go through Quadrise, or do the different entities talk to each other? And third question is just confusing. As the oil company and the oil refinery, they are totally different counterparties and companies. Thank you.
I don't know, well, perhaps if I can just start off first of all in terms of, we can't disclose the cost to date that we spent on this specific project. That's sort of commercially sensitive. I think in terms of the overall approach to project management, I'll just give a very brief introduction to sort of save sort of Jason's blushes on this. But, you know, despite the fact that we're working with, you know, much larger entities, you know, we are project managing this, and actually Jason made the comment earlier about the work that had been carried out by a third party on the boiler, and we, and particularly Jason and a colleague, were heavily involved in working with the oil company to refine and interpret the work that was done by the third party contractor so that it was actually delivering what was intended. And we are working with all of these parties in a detailed way to drive this project forward.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, Phil, that, you know, we pretty much project managed the process through to this point. So, you know, we're from the production side, we're ready to go. We have a team that, you know, can be deployed very quickly to start production. And from the end user point of view, we're project managing that. Well, at this moment in time, we're certainly project managing that. Delivery of that end of the project as well. So we're pretty much involved in all aspects of it and talking to all parties that are involved in the delivery of the trial.
Okay, but just the point is that do the different parties talk to each other, or is everything routed through yourselves as project controllers, still coordinators?
The different parties do talk to each other for sure. You know, they have other business also that they're discussing outside of the MSR trial.
Okay. And just one more point as well. The third point about the difference between the oil company and the oil refinery, different counterparties. Who is the actual main customer, is it an oil company, is it an oil refinery, or is it the electricity company? I don't know if I'm missing something there, but who's the actual, the main customer who wants this, who's the beneficial of this project?
If the main client, you would say, is the oil company.
Okay. Okay, well, thanks for that, gentlemen.
Yeah, the oil company's buying the fuel from the refinery, and then it's supplying the fuel to the electricity company.
Okay, and the oil company is different company completely from the refinery?
Correct.
Okay, thanks for that. Best of luck for the future, gents. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Next question comes from the line of Wayne Holden. Please go ahead.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much for holding the conference. I think it's helped to sort of clear up a lot of bits and pieces. My question hopefully is quite quick. Clearly the KSA is taking up an awful lot of time and resources at the moment, but I'm just curious if there is still any leads to be done in the marine side, or whether that has all been put to bed for a little while, or whether there's further trials to, or further plans to run a further trial a little bit later on.
I'll let Jason answer this in a bit more detail, but I think just to say there is a huge amount of focus on KSA, but that's not to say that we're excluding other things, and those are being actively pursued as well, but just a bit more detail on the marine side.
Yeah, I mean Martin Verl, who's at the AGM, he's been very busy. We've involved in a number of different groups within the marine world. We were talking with a number of different clients. What's encouraging, and I think it was mentioned in recent RNS as well, is that there seems to be some movement on the scrubber side. There seems to be a few players are actually starting to put scrubbers in, certainly on new builds. And obviously we're actively following that and following up with some of those clients as well to try and develop an interest and pursue the marine business, which we certainly think is very supportive to what we're still doing in the power markets as well.
Yeah, well, would that still require another trial with the X number of hours that was required for the Maersk trial, or can we bank some of the hours that came off the Maersk trial and just carry on from there with another ship, or are there going to be
trials to get... That's something we're in active discussion with the OEMs. Obviously, Barcelona is involved in the last trial, and that's something that we're discussing with them. Some of the ships have four-stroke engines, where we have a lot of experience as well. So the length of the trial depends a little bit on the applications. It's hard to be, I'm not being devious in my answer, but it depends a little bit on the application that we're talking about.
Okay. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Next question is a follow-up question from Max McLeod. Please go ahead.
Hello everyone again. Sorry, I didn't really batch up my questions, so I'm having another go. I have a couple. From the kind of refiner perspective, and they've set this deadline, and in negotiating or practical terms, I guess, by setting this deadline, they are hoping that this kind of creates a mini crisis, by which point the other parties get into gear and things go ahead. Do you have any idea what the time frame is between their deadline, which I think was at the 1st of April, and how long they might actually wait before in reality decommissioning the equipment? That's the first one.
And I think the short answer to that is no. But it isn't necessarily a... If they don't get the response in the required time, that they would necessarily decommission the equipment. But there isn't a we can't give you a definitive answer as to if it isn't by X, is it by X plus 10 days or X plus 30 days? We can't give that purely because we don't know.
Okay, thanks. Next one is... I didn't attend the AGM, unfortunately, I couldn't, but understanding from the forums and so on is that the mood was very positive and buoyant. So something kind of changed. Can you give us the story of what happened? I mean, was there just basically you weren't receiving any contact or any contracts and there was a delay And then what happened? At what point did you become aware that that there's something wrong? Because, you know, I understand from what you're saying, you deal with your client as an oil company, and the oil company is probably telling you that everything's good. So what was the story and what happened?
Right. I took a step back to the sort of AGM, which was early December, and we were very confident at that point. I think as I outlined in the sort of brief introduction, that was based entirely on the basis of the discussions that we were having with the entities in Kingdom, and that we got, you know, assurances that all the outstanding issues were going to be resolved very quickly, and all the contracts would be signed, and we'd actually be up and running prior to the end of the calendar year. And again, to give you a bit more context to that, you know, we've been working some of those initial contracts have been signed between various entities there sometime before that. So we got to a stage where things were very well developed and there were just a couple of minor things to progress. We then found ourselves coming towards the end of the calendar year and had to put an update out at that point that we'd not received the various signatures at that point. Though from the period of the AGM up until shortly after Christmas, we were still of the view that that was going to be delivered, and that was still the view from the oil company as well. We then went into the new year, and we put, I think, another announcement out around the 18th and 19th of February. What had happened at that point was a new issue had been brought to our attention between the two counterparties that we'd previously been made aware, that we'd previously been assured was not an issue in terms of this agreement between them not being a sort of a condition precedent of all the other agreements being able to be signed. And it was at that point that we then had to put the announcement out in mid-February. And we believed at that point a reasonable timescale for us to look as to when this agreement between these two counterparties could be concluded was by the end of the first quarter. We continued during this process to get very positive feedback from the oil company that these issues could be resolved, and the reason for that mood changing was at that last meeting that I was at over in Saudi Arabia earlier this week, that they just couldn't give us the sort of assurances that they had in the past that this is being addressed and will be resolvable in the short term. So that's basically where we are, Max, but we're continuing to work with all the relevant parties to actually progress this. And, you know, we clearly can't, and I don't want to get into a Theresa May style thing of we can't give you a running commentary on negotiations as you did with Brexit so frequently, but we really can't give you a running commentary on this, and it's not our negotiation, obviously it's between our two other third parties, but we're working really hard with all entities to try and get this progressed in as rapid a timescale as we can.
Okay, yeah, that's very interesting. So I guess if you're going to be, I mean, when you say working hard, you're going to be over there visiting the kingdom, and I guess you're going to be sitting in a room with the oil company, but you're not necessarily going to be sitting in a room with the oil company and the electric company at the same time.
That's probably unlikely, but, you know, as Jason has said, you know, Jason and the team have spent a lot of time with the electricity company, more at a senior level within the business, but focused on the operational issues of conducting the trial at one of their facilities. But we are looking at all ways that we can provide influence and guidance to those two parties, and above that as well, to try and influence that decision-making process and get it resolved as rapidly as possible.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much. Fingers crossed. And best of luck.
Thanks,
Max. Next question comes from line of Stephen Yelland. Please go ahead.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for having this conference call. It's very useful. Yeah, I suppose my question is one that hasn't been raised so far. It relates to the AkzoNobel arrangement, which I believe is due to expire in November. And so I'm just wondering what might be happening in terms of their fuel contract.
Interestingly, I don't know whether you've seen, but AkzoNobel chemicals business, there's been an agreement that that's going to be purchased by Carlyle Group and Sovereign Wealth Fund. We actually had a discussion with our contacts within AkzoNobel, and they're actually very positive about that transaction themselves, and mm-hmm. we are continuing to work with them on this very closely, and they still regard this as an opportunity which delivers some significant growth potential for them as a business. So, you know, we would expect to work with them positively to renew that on appropriate terms, because this is something that gives them, we believe, a business that will, to the new owners, be just as attractive as it is as part of the current AkzoNobel Group.
Yeah, so you're both embedded, and so hopefully it wouldn't be a stumbling block in November, fingers crossed.
We don't believe so, no.
No, thank you. That's great. Thank you.
Next question comes from the line of Julian Anderson. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. You're clearly dealing with two state-owned companies in the KSA, who both report to the same minister. Seems to me that heads need to be knocked together. There might need to be some intervention at that level. Has it arrived on his desk yet?
I can't say anything in detail other than to repeat what we've said, that, you know, we're using our influence, both our own and importantly our Saudi partners' influence within the kingdom, to ensure that the benefits of this technology are made clear at the highest levels within the country, so that they see the benefits that it can deliver. Because in Saudi terms, obviously the trial itself is a small project, but actually what it can deliver is significant in terms of value. So we're ensuring that it is recognised at that level, because typically, you wouldn't expect a project of this scale to reach the sort of levels within the kingdom that it actually has done. And I think, to go back to one of the comments that Jason made earlier, the fact that the hard work that's been done over many years by the team here has enabled emulsion fuels to be considered and acted as part of the future fueling strategy shows that it has been receiving attention at the very highest levels within the country, and we'll continue to press that.
Thanks, Mike. I just wonder whether, you know, we've reached a stage now where you could ratchet it up a further level through the involvement of the UK government and some support from that area.
But interestingly, Jason's last trip, he actually met with people from the sort of embassy over there. And I think it's what we've been looking to do is to look at the support from that in order for us to be looking at how we would roll out post a successful trial in a commercial scale. So we are looking at that, and historically there have been contacts at that level by Quadrise. But in the short term, it's actually using our Saudi partner to influence within the country that's going to be most effective, we think.
I see, yeah. Well, it's good to see that's happened. There's been some interaction there. I'm thinking more in terms of the UK Department of Trade and the various vehicles we've got, joint ventures with the Saudi business sector as a mechanism to push it forward. They have a meeting in London on the 9th of April. Is anybody in the company going to that?
We're aware of that meeting coming up, and other meetings that are planned as well within the kingdom, sir.
Yeah, so you'd be represented.
That's likely to be the case, but it depends a little bit, obviously, and on what's going on. But yeah, that's one of the options we have.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the question and answer session. I would like to turn the conference over back to Mike Kirk and Jason Miles for any closing remarks.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time to participate in the call. I hope you found it helpful. We've tried our best within the constraints we're working with to answer your questions. What I do think I can say to you is that, you know, we gave an undertaking at the AGM that we'd look at this sort of opportunity on a more regular basis. We clearly expected at that time it was going to be on a more positive note, but certainly what I've felt from this call is that, you know, it is a very effective and important use of management time to talk to principally our retail shareholders, and that we will be looking to do this on an appropriate basis when we've got news that we can impart to you more generally as well. So we think it's been valuable. I hope that you have too. Just to reiterate, for those that were not able to dial in perhaps through the whole of it, it will be recorded and we will actually put a copy of it up on our website at some point within the very near future. But thank you very much, everyone, and bye-bye.